Hi, Dave Emmer here. This is, for the record, program number 1344, Conversations with Monty. This is conversation number 18, and this is being recorded on August 18th of the year 2024. And once again, it is my pleasure and my privilege to bring back to our airwaves Monty, my new co-host, and he has been unpacking some connections that are as unpleasant as they may be confusing for some people. And if it seems like we're wandering far afield, what we're basically doing is showing the historical and political infrastructure that underlies J.B. Vance, the Republican nominee for vice president, and his jacket endorsement of a book by Jack Posobiec called Unhumans, labeling those whom the Republicans find enemies to be, quote, unhumans, unquote, and basically citing what Francisco Franco did to when he perceived the need to overthrow the Spanish government as a guiding principle, so to speak, for what they plan to do going forward. And as we are discovering, Marty, it really should not be a great surprise to see Francisco Franco lauded in what in 2024 might be termed a mainstream Republican document. So continue to unpack what really should be a cross between an 80s horror film, maybe, you know, Halloween or Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street and Back to the Future, because that's where we're going. Or is it Forward to the Past?
Yeah, Forward to the Past is one way of looking at this for sure.
Well, so go ahead. We're talking about Rupert Murdoch. He was a cabinet minister under Richard Nixon.
I want to draw a correction on that. It wasn't Murdoch. Like I said, my computer's being slow, and I had to remember some of this off the top of my head. A huge editorial connection. Correction. Roger Ailes, not Murdoch. Roger Ailes.
Okay, very good. Because I was going to say, although Ailes is something of a privilege here, Murdoch, I do recall Ailes being a Nixon administration.
I want to read a quick blurb from the Richard Nixon Foundation's website on Roger Ailes. This was dated 18 May 2017. Foundation news in memoriam news for Roger Ailes by the Richard Nixon Foundation. And it's a very quick blurb on him. Roger Ailes, Nixon's television man. As a 28-year-old TV expert, Roger Ailes produced and directed television programs for presidential candidate Richard Nixon, playing a key role in Nixon's great comeback and victorious presidential campaign in 1968. During the campaign, Ailes created the innovative and now famous The Nixon Answer TV town hall broadcast, in which candidate Nixon stood in the middle of a live arena audience and faced panels of questionnaires. This is Ailes speaking. My job is to create the problems and find, or reading again. My job is to locate the problems and find the solutions, Ailes said in a 1970 interview with U.S. News and World Report. No one in the White House staff is a television man, and that's why I am consulted. Following the 1968 campaign, Ailes was brought in as advisor to the president for communications, working on historic television broadcasts. All eyes were glued to television sets on the night of 20 July 1969, when Neil Armstrong became the first man to walk on the moon. President Nixon made a long-distance phone call from planet Earth to the moon from the Oval Office to congratulate the astronauts. Thanks to the genius of Roger Ailes, those at home watched on a split screen as the president and the astronauts both spoke to each other. Ailes was also called in to handle the broadcast of President Nixon's introduction of the new Chief Justice, Warren Burger, as well as several televised speeches in the Vietnam War. Roger and I worked on many assignments over the years. He was a very good friend, said Nixon Foundation Chairman Ron Walker. Little did I know he would end up changing cable television forever. Roger was a unique talent and major contributor to the national stage for four decades, said Fred Malik, a member of the Nixon Foundation Board of Directors and chairman of the Nixon Centennial Legacy Campaign. It was a great pleasure to be honored alongside him by our admission to the Horatio Alger Society in 2011.
By the way, I want to bump in very quickly. Fred Malek's name also surfaces in a article in the Hudson Valley Chronicle about the assassination of Martin Luther King. And as I recall, the allegation was that Malek was part of a milieu around the Magellan Art Gallery, I believe it was, in Atlanta, Georgia.
That's right.
That was alleged in that article by David Wimple to be an epicenter for the assassination of Martin Luther King. And again, Fred Malek's name pops up in connection with that. I'm not stating it so facto that he was involved in the assassination of Martin Luther King, but he is definitely mentioned as being part of that milieu in that particular article. And also, we should mention about Roger Ailes, he's sounding so great and wonderful doing all this stuff. The person, I should say, he cited as the dominant role model for what he was looking to achieve with Fox Television, with Fox News, was Leni Riefenstahl, the Nazi cinematographer who fashioned, among other things, the Triumph of the Will about the 36 Olympics, I think it was.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I'll stop quoting the article right there. Ultimately, Roger Ailes, as president of Roger Ailes and Associates Incorporated, wrote a position paper for the Nixon White House in 1971 that was just simply titled, and you'll get a kick out of this, Dave, the title of the document was Candidate Plus Money Plus Media Equals Votes by Roger Ailes.
Well, that's one way of looking at it.
Now, ultimately, this program was the basis for a counterpoint, what was supposed to be a counterpoint, excuse me, news network that would be pro-Republican Party. And that was a position paper called A Plan for Putting the GOP on TV News. It was a 318-page cache of documents that was written for the Nixon administration and ultimately revamped by George Herbert Walker Bush. So you can find elements of this document not only in the Nixon Presidential Library, but the George Herbert Walker Bush Presidential Library. And it should be noted that Roger Ailes Industry Productions and REA Productions, along with Ailes Communications, served as a paid consultant for both presidents, Richard Nixon and George Herbert Walker Bush. In fact, when you look in the Bush Library, to this document, A Plan for Putting the GOP on TV News, it shows that Roger Ailes personally provided spin doctrinaire advice to the effect of essentially how to pressure the American public into supporting the first Gulf War. So technically, Roger Ailes Associates and Ailes Communications Incorporated were war planners to convince the U.S. public psychologically how to accept the incoming Gulf War against Saddam. Now, that's the first Gulf War in the late 80s and early 90s. So there is a very interesting overlap to that. With all of the information I've set forth about World Commerce, about TFX and the fighter program, the things I've set forth about the First National Bank of Dallas, and ultimately, you know, the reactionary narco-terrorist elements that can be found within the milieu that I set forth in the previous couple of programs about the narco-terror network set up under World Commerce in China, under James Thompson, and of course, Sea Supply Corporation, and their overlap into the anti-Castro effort through Paul Helliwell and Willis Byrd. And once again, as you said, there's sort of back to the future, flash forward element to what we're presenting here. So I'm going to jump back before jumping forward to Roger Ailes again and what he represented for Richard Nixon by going back to Peter Dale Scott's The War Conspiracy, if I may quote this section real quick.
Absolutely.
Okay, so this is from Peter Dale Scott's The War Conspiracy. And you'll find this in Chapter 7 under Southeast Asian Intrigue. And it's a quote, "Underwriters Bank, one of Helliwell's linked banks, had the bulk of its stock owned by American International Underwriters, which was part of the burgeoning American International Group, AIG, which was run by the former OSS China hand, C.V. Starr, last name Starr. And for those of you listeners that know a little bit about corporate insurance, yes, I'm referencing that AIG, you know, the insurance powerhouse for the Fortune 500 companies.
And by the way, in the past interview with Lucy Commissar, she goes into some of the contemporary operations of AIG, and Cornelius V. Starr, its head. So, yeah, it's a name that would be familiar to the veteran listeners. Go ahead, Monty.
Continuing with Peter Dale Scott. In Shanghai before the war, Starr was a fixture in the social and business circles that included the powerful Keswick family, last name spelled K-E-S-W-I-C-K, of Hong Kong and Shanghai Banking Corporation, later HSBC, and Jardine Matheson, a last name spelled M-A-T-H-E-S-O-N. Jardine was a legacy holdout of the old British Opium Empire in China, who would later have a close cooperating partner within, of all entities, World Commerce Corporation. Oh, there it is again. The Cheswick name appears in the original Panamanian incorporation papers for World Commerce Corporation, specifically an entity called Cheswick Steamship Company, S.A. It appears to be a subsidiary of World Commerce Corporation, and that is logical given the heavy presence of the Cheswicks within the special operations community and the direct connections of leading world commerce figures like Charles Hambo and William Stevenson, both commanders of the special operations executive during the Second World War.
And by the way, one of the other principals involved with the World Commerce Corporation was William Donovan, head of the OSS, and a very busy player after World War II as well. Continue, Monty.
Correct. So it's fascinating that, once again, backpedaling a little bit, essentially what I just demonstrated here is that Paul Helliwell is legal counsel for V.T. Starr's interests, and of all places, the state of Florida. Continuing with the war conspiracy, as Peter Dale Scott writes, quote, "It is a striking fact that the law firm of Tommy Corcoran, a Washington lawyer for China Air Transport Company Lit, and T.V. Sung, has had its own links into the interlocking worlds of the China lobby and of organized crime."
But by the way, the guy's name is Tommy Corcoran, or known as Tommy the Cork. He was a right-wing Democrat and,
right, Tommy the Cork, right.
Under Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and apparently working to subvert a lot of what Roosevelt was trying to do.
Correct. His partner, meaning Tommy Corcoran or Tommy the Cork's partner, was a man by the name of W.S. Youngman, who joined the board of U.S. Life Insurance Corporation and other domestic insurance companies controlled by C.V. Starr, the old OSS China hand that we just referenced. With the help of the Philippine and Asian capital of the time, Youngman's fellow directors on Starr's company included John S. Woodbridge, that's last name spelled W-O-O-D-B-R-I-D-G-E, Woodbridge, who was the CEO of Pan American Airlines, Francis Randolph of J&W Siegelman, W. Palmer Dixon of Loeb Rhodes, Charles Edison of the post-war China lobby, and Alfred B. Jones of the Nationalist Chinese Government's registered agency, Universal Trading Corporation, which had holdings in Western Tube Corporation. Ha ha.
Oh, fascinating. No, wait a minute. Repeat that last one again, please.
So V.T. Starr's business partners and the founding of the China Air Transport Company with Tommy Corcoran included the president of Pan Am, John Woodbridge, Francis H. Randolph of J.W. Siegelman Company, which was they produced primarily rum and alcohol, W. Palmer Dixon of Loeb Rhodes, Charles Edison of the post-war China lobby, and Alfred B. Jones of the nationalist Chinese government's registered insurance company, Universal Trading Corp, which had holdings in Western Tube Corporation.
Fascinating. And by the way, for younger listeners or people who did not hear the long series I did, For the Record, programs 1195 through 1214, the narco-fascism of Chiang Kai-shek and the Kuomintang. The maneuvering the hot air and so forth around Taiwan, the former island of, known as, the island formerly known as Formosa when it was under Portuguese occupation, then became a Japanese colony, and it became the basis, the geological, or excuse me, the geographic basis for Chiang Kai-shek's Kuomintang. And long right. before he decamped to what is now Taiwan, the entire regime, the Chiang Kai-shek's regime, was a front for the Green Gang of Tu Yuesheng. It was based on dope trafficking, and that was the fundamental aspect of it. You mentioned P.V. Sung. It was his diplomatic escort who brought the heroin into the United States. Four rings that were owned by, or operated by, the late Lucky Luciano. So, when you hear about Chiang Kai-shek, you don't hear much about him, but all this about Taiwan, a self-governing democracy, blah, 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 blah. This all goes back not only to the Chinese Civil War, but World War II. And I wouldn't necessarily say Chiang Kai-shek was the most influential of the fascists of the World War II era, but certainly his stamp and the fundamentals.
He's an intrinsic powerhouse. I mean, he is in fact one of the founding members of the Asian People's Anti-Communist League, which eventually becomes the World Anti-Communist League. So, and he's also the financial conduit for the Latin American Anti-Communist League called CAL, which used as their front of operations the Autonomy University of Guadalajara, which is where the Los Tecos were operating. So ultimately, the financial conduit for funding Los Tecos in the post-World War II environment in Mexico City, which became the basis for Winston Scott's covert actions under the Light Temple program in Mexico, was Chiang Kai-shek. So I would have to argue that most of Latin American fascism in the post-World War II environment is thanks to Chiang Kai-shek. So I wouldn't downplay his importance. He is incredibly important to Latin American fascism of all things.
Yeah. Not only that, but you really could not exaggerate his significance in the international fascist pantheon and the fact that When the Iran-Contra scandal broke, and for the first time, seemingly, there was an awareness on the part of a fair number of people that the U.S. government was aiding and abetting drug trafficking. It was like, wow, look at this. Isn't this horrible? It had been going on for a long, long time, and that was the essence of what Chiang Kai-shek was all about. Continue, Marty.
So continuing with the board of directors of the company that is set up by VT Star, of course, the company I was referencing earlier was the AIG entity. Continuing with the narrative that's developed by Peter Dale Scott, it should be noted that in the McKellen Committee, that's spelled capital M-C, capital C-L-E-L-L-A-N, the McKellen Committee that was looking at the structure of the mafia in the 1950s, had heard that in 1950, the U.S. Life Insurance Corporation, once again, that had Charles Edison, who was truly one of the luminaries of the China lobby, working with VT Star and his AIG Insurance Corporation, which was, you know, once again, had the interlocking presence of Tommy Corcoran, Tommy the Cork, being an attorney for the entity, and Cien Vien Sung, TV Soon, acting as one of the financial conduits helping support its underwriting. It should be noted that the McKellen Committee heard that in 1950, the U.S. Life Insurance Corporation, which had Thomas Edison as its director, and a much smaller company called the Union Casualty Corporation of New York, were allotted a major Teamsters insurance contract after a lower bid from a larger company and a safer company had been rejected. Jimmy Hoffa was later accused as the president of the Teamsters Union by a fellow trustee testifying under oath before another subcommittee of the McKellen Committee of intervening on behalf of U.S. Life and Union Casualty, whose agents were Hoffa's close business associates, Paul and Alan Dorfman, okay, who oversaw the Teamsters Union Pension Fund. Now, what Peter Dale Scott doesn't mention when he talks about Pan Am and John S. Woodbridge, the president of the Pan Am Corporation in 1951, being a part of this AIG corporate empire set up by Charles V. Starr, and, of course, its connections to Jimmy Hoffa and the Teamsters Union through the Union Casualty Company of New York, which, of course, was a sub-entity of U.S. Life Insurance, which in turn was a sub-entity of the Star interests in AIG. It should be noted that Juan Tripp, who was the founder and longtime administrator of Pan Am, Pan American Airlines, last name spelled T-R-I-P-P-E, Juan Tripp. He was the brother-in-law of the board of directors of the World Commerce Corporation. Juan Tripp's brother-in-law was a man by the name of Edward Stettinius, last name spelled S-T-E-T-T-I-N-I-U-S, Stettinius.
I believe that's actually pronounced Stettinius, and he was
Stettinius, yes.
He was at one point Secretary of State under FDR, heavily involved with U.S. Steel, and also a major player in the post-World War II World Commerce Corporation. Go ahead.
Correct. That's Juan Tripp's brother-in-law.
Interesting. Interesting.
And of course, you know, as you pointed out, he was found on the board of one of Stettinius's World Commerce Corporation adjutant companies. Juan Tripp served on the board of directors of the Liberian Development Company, okay, which is a direct reference to the country Liberia. Just to give your listening audience a bit of a background, the Liberian Development Corporation and the Liberian Steamship Company, of which Stettinius was a sat on the board of directors of both of those entities, were essentially using flags of convenience to bypass workers' rights unions here in the United States. You know, so essentially, what it was is if you flew a ship, say. Let's entertain for a moment that you're the United Fruit Company, which did have contracts with the Liberian Development Company, or Standard Oil, which had contracts with the Liberian Development Company, or Shell Oil, or British Petroleum, or you know, any one of the major oil entities, you know, the Hunt Oil Company, the Murchison Oil Companies. All of these entities had holdings with the Liberian Corp for flags of convenience. Essentially, you could go out into international waters, dock in a foreign dock under the Liberian flag, and you would not have to pay tariffs and taxes to the United States government. You know, that's the crux of flags of convenience provided by the Liberian Corporation. Okay.
That's fascinating. Fascinating. Now, something to keep in mind, Monty, we've got a little over 35 minutes left in the interview. And we want to tie this up with the 2016 and 2020 MAGA campaigns and cite the funding conduits that the Franco milieu in Spain and the Augusto Pinochet milieu in Chile have in common with the people who are financing Donald Trump and J.D. Vance, etc.
Well, I'll speed up this narrative real quick then. I can get that under 30 minutes.
Very
Ultimately,
good.
another person that served on the board of directors of the Liberian Corporation was Charles Edison himself, who served on the China Lobby's committee for 1 million alongside Joseph Grew, last name spelled Grew, who himself was a fixture of the management of Stettinius's Liberian companies.
And Grew also was a former ambassador to Japan, very close to the
Right.
Morgan Group, and very, very supportive of Japanese fascism and very much opposed to China, and except
Right.
during the actual shooting war of World War II itself. Go ahead, Monty.
It should be noted that Joseph Grew was also part and parcel to the creation of the First National Bank of Tokyo, of which Yoko Ono's father was the president of. Who we've mentioned a previous program and a Patreon program as being connected to the J. Henry Schroeder Banking Corporation. It was, in fact, the president of the J. Henry Schroeder Bank, Frank Tarkus, who was a Nazi intelligence agent during the Second World War, that did, in fact, appoint Yoshio Ono, Yoko Ono's father, as president of the First National Bank of Tokyo. But we'll pick up on that once we pivot to Asia in a later program, even though I'm already making a pivot into Asia in case you haven't noticed.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I hope to set forth, and again, we'll get right back into your connections that you did, the delineating for us here, but
right.
What we're doing, and if you hear about the pivot to Asia, about China doing this, China doing that, really since the end, really before the end of World War II, or since the end, we have picked up the Japanese agenda in Asia, and starting with the dividing of Korea at the 38th parallel. The Koreans did not want their country divided, and there was a Colonel Bonesteel who later became a key CIA general and linked general in the Vietnam War, but the other guy was Colonel David Dean Rusk, and he dropped the David part when he became a diplomat and an operator. But I knew Dean Rusk, as he called himself, as the Secretary of State who kept quiet about what Kennedy was doing before he was killed, and then loyally served LBJ all right up to the end of the LBJ administration. So, what we're seeing now in Asia with the Uyghurs, and really what was going on. From the end of World War II, before, the U.S. was picking up the Japanese agenda in Asia. I mean, it is stunning to me, having grown up watching, you know, the manufactured history of World War II on victory, programs like Victory at Sea and so forth. It amazes me. Marty, continue. We got just over a half hour left.
Sure thing. It's interesting to note that once again, continuing at the Liberia Corporation, the top lobbyist to the country of Liberia all throughout the 1950s and 60s was a man by the name of Edward K. Moss, last name spelled Moss, Edward K. Moss. And through his lobby corporation, which was just named after himself, Edward K. Moss Associates, he represented the vice president and the prime minister of Liberia and their financial holdings here in the United States. Interestingly enough, by 1962, Edward K. Moss is the top lobbyist for the DRE, the Anti-Communist Legion of the Caribbean, and he's also the personal attorney to Manuel Artima, okay?
key anti-Castro Cuban operative with long-standing ties to CIA at all. Go ahead. Fascinating.
Right.
Go ahead.
Another note on Liberia is the fact that they had an embassy in the United States in 1963, which was based out of all places, the International Trademark in New Orleans.
which was headed up by Clay Shaw.
Right, right. So we're starting to see this overlap of World Commerce Corporation, the old China lobby hands, the fascist elements that are funding the anti-Castro effort, and ultimately, there it is, the Liberian Corporation, the flags of convenience being used by the oil companies in this time period, and of course, the international trademark. It should also be noted that Tibor Rosenbaum, last name spelled Rosenbaum, who was a banker for an entity called Permandex, which of course, had connections with Clay Shaw and his international trademark in New Orleans. Whenever he traveled into the United States, he traveled on a Liberian passport. He was also the president of the Swiss Liberian Finance Corporation. Now I don't know what to make of that last part, but I'm just simply stating it as a fact that when Rosenbaum, banker for Permandex, traveled into the United States, it was always on a Liberian passport, and he headed up seemingly a money laundering entity called the Swiss Liberian Finance Corporation, which appears to heavily overlap into the World Commerce Corporation and the Liberian Development Company. So an interesting little robin's nest, nest, if you will, of transnational fascists, narco-terrorists, and their money laundering cohorts. Continuing with VT Star and his AIG complex, it should be noted that one of Star's companies in the Philippines provided financing for another entity, a gold mining concern called Benguet. That's the spelling on that is Benguet. And Benguet was taken over by Charles Allen and his brother, Herbert Allen, due to a law and the Philippines barring foreigners from holding domestic natural resources, which they had to liquidate their holdings in a company, which culminated in a complex scheme that was hatched where Benguet would be purchased by a company called DevCo, the Grand Bahama Development Corporation, which was launched by three men. Lou Chesler, who was a banker in Miami, a man by the name of Wallace Grove, who was a close business associate of Paul Helliwell, and of course, the Miami banker Charles Allen, that I mentioned. And all of the gold and natural resources operations would in turn be given to the Filipino government right into the hands of Marcos Frontman in 1962. So that is the essence of the Grand Bahama Development Corporation controlled by Wallace Groves and Paul Helliwell. It should be noted that according to the research put forth by Hank Abarelli and his posthumous release, Coup in Dallas, one of Wallace Grove's business partners in the Grand Bahama Development Corporation representing all gold mining concerns in the Philippines in 1962 is a man by the name of Hjalmar Horace Greeley Schult.
Hjalmar Horace Greeley Schult was the first finance minister of Nazi Germany, generally credited with having arranged the financing of Weimar Germany so that the inflation basically negated the reparations Germany was paying at, say, to help to pave the way for Hitler. And there are interesting links between Hjalmar Schacht and Albert Schweitzer College, the admissions officer who admitted Lee Harvey Oswald to that small obscure institution. Was Robert Schacht, I believe, a relative of Hjalmar Horace Greeley Schacht. And one of the key people in this whole Bahamas concatenation is Meyer Lansky and his milieu as well. Continue, Mavi.
Right. Which I should note, when I mentioned Paul and Alan Dorfman, it should be noted that Robert Dorfman, father to Alan Dorfman, who was the finance officer for the Hoffa Teamsters Pension Fund that's being used by the Union Casualty Company of New York under U.S. Life Insurance, under AIG for all of their major contracts within the Teamsters Union. It should be noted that Robert Dorfman, father to Alan Dorfman of the Teamsters Pension Fund, was a very old friend of Jack Ruby. In fact, Jack Ruby, as the manager of the Silver Spur and the Carousel Club, two major nightclubs in the Dallas-Fort Worth area in 1963, those clubs were actually owned by Alan Dorfman's father.
So, again, this milieu is inextricably linked with not only Dallas, but organized crime. We have a little over 25 minutes left, Monty. We want to make sure we tie this in with the financing of MAGA in 2016 and 2020 and J.B. Vance, Pinochet, Franco, et cetera. Continue.
Right. So ultimately, you know, moving out of the milieu of the Grand Bahama Development Corporation, which I should note, was also a sister entity to Castle Bank with, Paul Helliwell, which we know for a fact was a money laundering entity for covert action in the Western Hemisphere. Ultimately, The non-natural resource assets of the Grand Bahama Development Corporation would be spun off and sold to an entity called Intercontinental Diversified Corporation, IDC. Now, who controlled IDC? Well, it was a board member of a bank called Cosmos Bank. That's spelled C-O-S-M-O-S. And that man's name was C. Gerald Goldsmith, last name spelled G-O-L-D-S-M-I-T-H. Now, according to the author Jonathan Marshall, who wrote a brilliant article called Supermob, Cosmos Bank, and I should note that the article Supermob, written by Jonathan Marshall, who's also the author of the book Dark Money, which talks about Republican politics and their connections to these various front entities. It should be noted that Jonathan Marshall identifies Cosmo Bank connected intimately with the Grand Bahama Development Corporation of Paul Helliwell and Wallace Groves and Hymar Horace Greeley Schult, but to the initial transaction between DevCo, the Benguet Gold Mining Corporation in the Philippines, and the transfer to the aforementioned Intercontinental Diversified Corporation. And some of the people that sat on the board of directors of Intercontinental Diversified Corporation included the following persons: Henry Crown, who installed Frederick M. Glass as vice president and chief executive of the Empire State Building Corporation. This is the same Henry Crown that owns the Hilton Hotels. As a point, you brought up the 488th Military Intelligence Detachment, Dave, earlier in the previous program. It should be noted that the president of the Hilton Hotel in Havana was a colonel in the United States Army by the name of George Whitmire. And Lieutenant Colonel George Whitmire was the deputy of security for the 488th Military Intelligence Detachment. As general manager of the Havana Hilton Hotel, the owner of the Havana Hilton in 1959 was Meyer Lansky. He owned it in its entirety. And the top floor of the Havana Hilton was a private suite for Fulgencio Bautista. So ultimately, you know, read into that. You know, the chief of security for the 488th Military Intelligence Detachment that provided the security for President Kennedy and his motorcade, that very same man, Lieutenant Colonel George Whitmire, was the general manager and the floor manager for security of the Havana Hilton, owned by Meyer Lansky, who had at its top floor a special suite for Fulgencio Bautista to run his day-to-day operations.
And of course, Fulgencio Bautista was the fascist dictator of Cuba who was deposed by Fidel Castro following a Revolutionary War. Go ahead.
Right. The same Frederick M. Glass was a former employee and co-founder of America News Corp. The very same entity that would back Roger Ailes in his creation of Fox News, which spawned, I should like to remind the listening audience, Fox News spawned out of a war plan contingency developed by the Richard Nixon communications consultants under Roger Ailes and John Ehrlichman to place a counterpoint narrative or an attack platform to destroy the democratic processes of the United States of America. That's what its sole function was. Under Roger Ailes' vision, it was meant, and this is a direct quote from Roger Ailes' 319-page report on putting the GOP platform in the public eye in television. Ultimately, within that report, he says that it should act as an attack platform for GOP policies, but ultimately for the long-term goals of Richard Nixon and his financiers. And I have just demonstrated who was sitting on the board of directors of American News Corp when Fox News Corporation was in fact receiving their initial front monies. So here is this gargantuan network, if I may encapsulate it, Dave, that we've shown across four different programs now here on For the Record. that demonstrates that the very same narco-terror networks that were established in the Far East under the World Commerce Corporation of James Thompson and the presence of Willis Byrd, right down to the anti-Castro Cuban efforts under Paul Helliwell, and of course his interests with Wallace Groves and Hymar Horace Greeley Shalt, in turn connected to a very bizarre mining operation, the Western Tube Corporation, and of course the mining entities of DEVCO, linking right back structurally to somebody who sat on the board of directors of American News Corp and the founding of Fox News. I mean, this is a gargantuan financial supply line. And for people who have trouble believing that, I would turn the listening audience's attention to the programs that you have already done demonstrating, and you'll have to fill me in on which programs these are, Dave, but you've already done a huge expose, as it were, about the financial connections to the committee to reelect the president and how they link back to Propaganda Due and the Vatican banking scandal. I mean, I know you've already done programs on that. I just don't remember which ones.
AFA program number 18 talks about the Vatican banking scandals. And again, Richard Nixon was inextricably linked with McKaylee Sindona and the Lee Chiu Jilly, I think, was at Richard Nixon's inauguration. Not sure. I know he was at Ronald Reagan's, but I think Nixon would put a question mark by that. But now this... my guess is that listeners' heads are spinning with the names that have been handed out to them and the many institutions with whom they are affiliated. And I want to briefly interject that if this seems confusing, it's meant to be. It's not meant to be transparent. It's meant to be opaque.
No. These are very complex corporate webs that ultimately that what the glue, if I may, sorry for my stutter, the glue, if I may, that links all of these corporate entities together. Ultimately, what I'm demonstrating here is narcotics. This is the flow and ebb of narco-terror networks here in the United States that support covert action overseas, and ultimately the phenomena that we saw throughout the Cold War of one coup d'etat after another in the Western Hemisphere, specifically the Western Hemisphere. It appears that this is the financial conduit in which fascism came to our hemisphere.
It is certainly a major part of it. But now, we've got about, a little over 15 minutes left. We need to tie this in.
Absolutely.
With Trump 2016, 2020, bearing in mind that Trump's political mentor and attorney was the late Roy Cohn, number one spear carrier for Senator Joe McCarthy in his anti-communist witch hunts and, crusades. So, MAGA 2016, MAGA 2020, how does it link up with Pinochet's financing and the people who were touting Francisco Franco as a role model?
Right. Real quick, if I may pivot just for 2 minutes back to the Hilton Board of Directors and its connections to George Whitmire, it should be noted that the man that was the owner of the Mexico City Hilton Hotel was a man by the name of Frank Brandstetter, and he was the founder of the 488th Military Intelligence Detachment. Colonel Frank Brandstetter, last name spelled Brandstetter. And when Lucio Gelli came to the United States for Ronald Reagan's inauguration, he was actually held up in the Mexico City Hilton, of which Frank Brandstetter was the general manager of at the time. So you let that sink in, you know, the connection between 488th Military Intelligence, Lucio Gelli, and the Nixon administration. Very fascinating. And what I've demonstrated already about the Grand Development Corporation in Florida of Lou Chesler and the Grand Bahamas Development Corporation with Paul Helliwell and Hymar Horace Greeley Shalt.
And now that we've got 15 minutes to tie this in with Trump, so we've got about 15 minutes left here, Bobby.
Absolutely, absolutely. So ultimately, What is fascinating about the board of directors of News Corporation, which is in fact the parent company of Fox News, in 2015, the main liaison officer, okay, so this was the liaison officer between the board of directors of News Corporation and the Trump found, the Trump campaign of 2015 and ultimately the Trump campaign of 2020. A very interesting character. His name is Jose Maria Aznar. Last name spelled Aznar. And he's the former prime minister of Spain.
Okay.
Now, as the former prime minister of Spain, he oversaw from 2001 to 2005 all of Spanish support activities for the United Nations special secretary to non-proliferation and investigations into weapons of mass destruction, Hans Blix. And ultimately, he oversaw the support teams for the United States Army that went into Iraq to investigate weapons of mass destruction. Now, you'll remember in the previous program, Dave, I was talking about Staff D Communications Intelligence and QJ Wynn being run out of Madrid, right?
Yes.
Okay. The CIA NSA team that went in with Hans Blix, once again, with the full support of the Prime Minister of Spain and his weapons of mass destruction administrators. And I forget their names off the top of my head. We'll come back to them eventually in another program when I talk about Staff D. It should be noted that the NSA team that went in under the command of the Prime Minister of Spain was the Staff D element of the CIA. Bear in mind, this is the same Staff D element that William King Harvey used to hide the CIA's executive action assassination teams. So here we have a structural overlap, not only to the phenomena of false reports coming out of Iraq during the opening salvos of the Iraq War in 2003, about weapons of mass destruction connected directly to the Prime Minister of Spain, but the entire technical infrastructure that went into Iraq to investigate weapons of mass destruction came out of the CIA's joint effort with the NSA through their Staff D electronic surveillance program. Now, this is new information that I have developed within the past week. I'm still incubating it for your listening audience, and I'm still trying to develop the connections to this. But it is very disturbing that Jose Aznar, once again, last name spelled A-Z-N-A-R, is one of, at one point, he was the chairman of the People's Alliance of Spain, that's the Aslan Popular, or the Popular Front, which is a pro-Francoist electoral coalition, you know, whatever that means, that was transformed into a political party in 1977. Now, the founder of this very same political party, you know, the Aslan Popular, or the Popular Alliance, or the People's Alliance in Spain, is the aforementioned Manuel Fraga. That is the same Manuel Fraga that served as Minister of Information and Tourism. Very interesting, because he also oversaw all television production in Spain between 1962 and 1969. And as Minister of Franco's Information and Tourism Bureau, he also oversaw all propaganda activity for Franco's Spain, and he was a conduit to the CIA's Staff D assassination executive action ZR rifle program in Madrid in 1962.
The Staff D as in dog, not Staff B as in boy, right?
Yes, Staff D. D for decryption. That is what that staff stands for. Staff D, D, D for decryption. And ultimately, when I stumbled across this and saw this connection, I mean, my jaw just about hit the floor. I mean, there, right there, Mr. Emery, is direct continuity between electronic warfare intelligence under the CIA their assassination capabilities wholly funded by narco-terrorist rat lines set up by the OSS, later the World Commerce Corporation, and then, of course, CIA operatives operating out of the Miami area. Roger Ailes and his whole purpose for creating Fox News as a conduit to support the position of Richard Nixon's finance officers and their interests, Richard Nixon's connections to the top financial wizard of the Iron Guard and the fascists in Romania, linking all the way back to Nixon's presence within the anti-Castro community, and the anti-Castro community being supported by the Liberian Corporation, in turn through their flags of convenience through DEVCO and Interwriter Holdings Development with Hymar Horace Greeley Schultz, and not to mention that the Bank of the Bahamas was founded by a Nazi war criminal. Ultimately, it has to be appreciated that this entire structural network through Fox News, through the Trump campaign, is controlled in 2020 by the former Prime Minister of Spain, who quite literally is one of the acolytes of Manuel Fraga within the AP party of Spain, which is a pro-Franco party. It is the most far-right entity that exists within Spanish politics today, outside of the fledgling, you know, Falange elements that still hold true to the Jones Francoist government. But ultimately, this is the most direct connection that I could find within the Trump campaign and Fox News and the former Minister of Propaganda and Information and Tourism through the Franco government. These are direct inroads to understanding this milieu. Just to give you a little bit about the political career of José Marie, Aznar, not only was he the president of the government of Spain from 1996 to 2004, but according to his own blurbs from the Madrid Club, okay, which is more or less an extension of the Council on Foreign Relations, so consider the source, ladies and gentlemen, it should be noted that before he began his political career in 1975, he was the chief tax authority inspector for Spain. Now, that is fascinating that he oversaw all tariffs and payment of such tariffs for the shipping industry coming in and out of Spain. And once again, I have demonstrated that one of the main conduits for the narco-terror empire controlled by Paul Helliwell, Wallace Groves, and ultimately Hymar Horace Greeley Schultz in 1963 through the Grand Bahama Development Corporation, ultimately represented shipping out of Liberia and into the Iberian Peninsula. Read into that, Spain. So it is fascinating that José Marie Aznar, the chief conduit between the board of directors of the Fox News Corporation and the Trump campaign of 2015 and 2020, has this in his background. Reading again from the same Club of Madrid document, it also states that he began his political career as a member of the Al-Azad Popular Front in 1979. In 1982, he was elected member of parliament for Alivia, eventually became regional president of the Al-Azad Popular Front. And in 1987 and 1989, he served as the head of the Castile and Leon regional government while representing all of the treasury, representing the financial interests as the treasurer of the Al-Azad Popular Front, which once again, we have to remember the continuity of that entity. It was founded by the chief of propaganda. Once again, the Minister of Information and Tourism and the chief of propaganda for the Franco government. This man was a war criminal of the worst order who worked directly with Otto Skorzeny and William King Harvey's staff, DQJ Win Networks, during the events leading up to the murder of President Kennedy. So what's to be said about the entire continuity of the Trump campaign and its interests with the Fox News Corporation? Ultimately, that is representational not only of the CIA's electronic warfare networks, their assassination networks, their seemingly the false stories that we were given about weapons of mass destruction coming out of Iraq, but ultimately it is representational of a continuity of political operatives that literally represent the worst of the worst of Franco's terror, white terror networks that were active in the 1950s and 60s. And I should note, the reason why I keep on mentioning Manuel Fraga's title as the deputy minister of not only information, read into that propaganda, but of tourism, because we have to remember that the way that Otto Skorzeny and the CIA were running their rat lines in Madrid is that they were using legal travelers aid associations in order to get their rat line operatives in and out of hotspots in Eastern Europe and in the Soviet bloc and ultimately the Soviet Union. Okay. And one of those men that was running these, tourist information bureaus for the State Department was Spas Toptivor Rankin, who worked for Legal Travelers Aid Associations in the state of New York.
And he, of course, was also Secretary General of the American Friends of the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, which is the remaining of the Committee of Subjugated Nations of Alvin Rosenberg and Adolf Hitler. Mommy, we are almost out of time. I want to give people a little heads up. There is a short book about Donald Trump called The Making of Donald Trump. The author is David K. Johnston, who bit hook, line, and sink on the whole Russiagate thing. So I think his pronouncements in that regard can be dismissed. But he wrote a very good book about Donald Trump and his, The Making of Donald Trump. And if you examine him, Trump, that is, and what he did, he was so involved with not only high-end real estate, but also gambling casinos, both favorite money-laundering projects of nefarious interests. But if you look at what he did, most people would wind up in prison or disgrace. If they've done that, somebody is running interference for Donald Trump.
Oh, absolutely. And I think I just identified one of the top people that was running interference in the propaganda that we were given during the 2016 election cycle and the 2020 election cycle, and the viciousness of Fox News promoting this propaganda. Ultimately, this man who represented the transition, once again, the liaison officer, I want to make this very clear to your listening audience, the liaison officer, if I were to encapsulate this in just one soundbite, the liaison officer between Fox News Corporation and its parent entity and the Trump campaign of 2015 and 2020 is an acolyte of Francisco Franco's chief of information and his top propaganda conduit. And that is Jose Marie Aznar, last name once again spelled A-Z-N-A-R. And I would, if I may, make a direct plea to the entire listening audience of Dave Emery's program. Please, if you could help me and Dave Emery in researching this character, I would truly appreciate it, because unfortunately, so much about the staff D operations that were conducted in support of NATO joint operations with the Spanish into Iraq, unfortunately, those are still sealed documents. The Spanish government has given up nothing, and ultimately we have to appreciate who the prime minister and the president of Spain was in that time period. This very same Jose Marie Aznar, very same man. I mean, it's a fascinating continuity.
It is. We are all out of time, however. So again, if the allegations that Monty has voice about Mr. Aznar, I have no reason to doubt what he's saying, but if people can locate documentation that will flesh out those allegations, it will be most welcome. However, you know, we have Donald Trump, you know.
Yeah, because if I may, as I pointed out earlier, Dave, this is all embryonic. I just developed this within the past 7 days, but I felt it was important enough to bring to the attention of your listening audience, considering all of these connections, they're all linked. It's fascinating.
It is indeed, and we'll have to wait. I want to talk about the 1968 Mexico Olympics. Also want to talk about COVID, but that's going to have to wait.
Oh, wonderful.
This concludes For the Record program number 1344, losing count. Conversations with Mavi. This is conversation number 18. This is being recorded on August 18th of the year 2024. For Monday, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.